Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop.
Fun.
Radio.
Welcome to Big Pop Fun, the podcast with your host, Tom Wilson. Brought to you by Tom's Art and BigPopFun.com. Moving pictures to make you happy. Hey, support the artists by buying art. Big Pop Fun. Tom. Life. Showbiz. People. Here's Tom.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Big Pop Fun Podcast. I'm Tom Wilson, your talented and tall host. I'm not that tall, really, but in terms of show business, I actually elephantine and ginormous. But hey, welcome back. Welcome back. Thanks, Jeff Harlan, the official long time now, 2 years, almost 100 episodes. Jeff Harlan is the official announcer of the Big Pop Fun Podcast. And I thank Jeff for helping me out with all those announcements and little bumper things and everything. Jeff is a great guy. Hey, well, he's actually been a guest on the podcast. So if you haven't listened to that, Jeff is one of the leading actors in – he's done maybe thousands of national commercials and guest star stuff on TV. So we talked kind of the inner workings of being a character actor and acting in commercials and things like that. So check that that episode out, Jeff Harlan. I just saw Jeff a couple days ago, in fact. We went to a little hot dog cheeseburger joint in town. Yeah, I had the apple slaw covered turkey burger, which was very good. They had it on the chalkboard, one of those places with the chalkboard, and one of the servers or somebody drew in chalk the apple slaw turkey burger, which I had, and it was delicious. I made, I eat fast. I think it's just, look, I'm ginormous and elephantine. I have a big mouth. I just eat. My bites take up half the apple slaw turkey burger. In my opinion, the burgers and hot dogs, everything's getting a little smaller, you know, like the candy bars. There was that snack size and then fun size and now mini size. And that, can they get smaller? Can they get to just nibble sized? And it's half the size of the mini thing, and it's almost, you almost can't see it if it's in your palm. But it's kind of a Kit Kat bar. But you need an electron microscope to actually see what you're eating. But thank you. Thank you, Jeff. Well, he didn't pay for it. I mean, I bought my own apple slaw turkey burger, so don't get crazy, Jeff. I mean, thank you for coming out to lunch with me, because I'm not that popular and can't get people to have lunch. No. It was a delicious turkey burger, and I had fun. How about that? It looked good. It did look good when it came with all the – I think – isn't it getting a little crazy with the – everything has to really – boy, that plate appeal with the bun, the top bun has to be kind of off the burger now. So you put it on the top because they have to present the apple slaw topping and everything. So it has to look like a picture from one of those Guy Fieri Food Network shows, whatever that diner drive thing. Diners. Man, am I on the pulse point of the culture or what? I just know what's going on. But you know the show I'm talking about where they just show food. Where they just show you food and food and more food. And then you watch Chopped and watch Weird Food. Look at this. I'm going to make a dessert out of some gravel, Le Sueur peas, and vodka. I'm going to make you a dessert. So, yeah. But the food has to look good. Because now television is just... It just feeds our hungers, man. Television, I know. I'll get off the soapbox, pardon me. But it just does feed hunger now, doesn't it? It doesn't feed anything. It doesn't feed your thought process. It doesn't feed your soul. It doesn't feed your heart or your mind. It just feeds hunger. It just stokes the flames of hunger. So now it's not only, you know, what any kind of imagery from action imagery, sexual imagery, food imagery, everything is just like, look, be hungrier. And then the commercials come on and then they just say, you can buy all this and no more hunger. And that works out perfectly if LA is any indication. See, early on in the solo one, I'm already Mr. Philosophy talking about just our hungers, and we're actually becoming these machines of insatiable appetites instead of human beings. But let's all just be human beings and go on this magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder. That's what Big Pop Fun is. It is a magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we realize that, hey, it's only one sleigh. We're in it together, so we might as well just make it enchanting and wonderful. Wonderful. It's brought to you by my book, The Masked Man, available for Kindle and Nook and iPad, all that stuff. Hey, read it. It's got a lot of people like it. So it's an audiobook. Get this. Well, they've accepted it on Amazon and these places for an audiobook. What a process that is. Wow. Got some help from my friend James Arnold Taylor. Check out his podcast with me. But he helped me. I recorded it in his studio. But the engineering of it and the making for little spaces, you need a 2-second gap in there. And that one is peaking, so the levels have to be blah. And it has to be remastered because of the – wow, what a process. But it's going to be out. So if you want to hear some of this magic, me reading you stories – I bet you like it, me reading your stories, but it's like, I think it's 9 or 10 hours of me reading. But put it on your phone, put it on your machine, put it on your computer, and listen to it while you have your earbuds in, on the train, on the plane, on the automobile, on the John Candy movies with Steve Martin. Speaking of television, I had another conversation with my mom. This is not going to be a podcast about that kooky stuff mom says, but I did the previous podcast to this one was the one where she said, I love babies and I love puppies and I love a 2-wheeled bike. And I talked to you about my love of bikes, and I guess I got it from her. I've been out on my bike. Thank the good Lord. I've been out on my bike so many times since we last spoke. And that's probably why I'm late on most of these podcasts, because I'm just, you know, my teeth are dry in the cool wind from my smiling, and just riding my bike in the sunshine. If you're in the snow right now, hey, they've got those big knobby tires with like big spikes coming out of them. Put on a couple of those and go out in the snow. Why not? But I was talking to mom again, and she says, we were talking about another fun topic, television journalism. But anyway, she worked in this law office in the 50s. She was a legal secretary. It's I forget the name of the building, but it has a big golden eagle on the facade of the building in downtown Philadelphia. And every time I walk by there, I think of mom's first job. But she was a legal secretary, and it's a rather prominent firm down in downtown Philadelphia. So many prominent people would come there. And at one time, Connie Mack, who had been a brilliant baseball player, pro baseball player, and was the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, I think, and quite a Philadelphia, you know, bon vivant and businessman who actually had the stadium named after him, all this kind of stuff. He became a big business guy, and he was represented by mom's legal firm, since most legal secretaries eventually do have the firm named after them. So Connie Mack was making a big deal about the stadium, the previous, which had been Scheib Park in Philadelphia, and he was in there offices quite a bit, and news people, journalists, you know, newspaper people, early television reporters wanted to know where Connie Mack was what he was doing, and they wanted to know if he was in the legal offices. So they were always around mom's legal offices, and she was there, secretary at a desk. And they would lie to her routinely. They would trick her or another girl in the office. They would trick her and say that what any kind of terrible thing that someone's child was injured and they need to get to them. Is he in the office? And they would say, well, he is here. So mom ended the conversation by saying, you know, news people are scummy, rude people, and they're liars. I said, yeah, that's good, Mom. Good. It took a long time to come to that, but yes, they are. She was convinced of it in the 50s, and it took me till, I don't know, late 60s, I think, when I was reading reports from Woodstock in Mad Magazine. I'm back from Rochester, Minnesota, where it was 1 degree and snow. It's interesting that when it goes to one, it's singular. It was just a degree. It was 1 degree. It was snowing, but it was lovely. The people of Rochester, home of the Mayo Clinic, or after I met several people from Rochester, that place should be called the Extra Mayo Clinic, because I think that all the environs of the Mayo Clinic are deep fried and covered in cheese. But it's a great town, and I flew out of Minneapolis, and I'm just glad, boy, I've almost survived this winter flying all around and not being too delayed. So Minnesota was a little interesting, and one flight was kaput, but I finally made it there and home. Then I went to Napa Valley, California, a beautiful area of the country, unless you can't see anything because of the driving rain, because the absolute deluge that I was driving through. And when you get that a little bit further north of San Francisco, Oakland, I think they've given up on roadsides. I think they have. I think they do that like, we're Napa. Haven't you seen the movies about us? We don't need road signs. You should just know where you're going, especially in a rental car, in a torrential downpour. But I did get to my place, and we had a wonderful time at Black Stallion Winery up there. I kind of hosted, emceed, and performed at a dinner up there. We had fun, but the highlight, it's not the highlight of 2014. I will say it's the highlight of several years now as far as performing on stage goes, because I've told you about the Meltdown show, and I recommend it highly on Wednesday nights. Now they're having a lot of times, they have two shows on Wednesday nights. It's become so popular. The standing room only. Meltdown Comics is a little bit east of Laurel Canyon on Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood. And they have a wonderful show there where everyone who's anyone performs at it. But my gosh, it's a lot of fun. And the audience is kind of supportive and listening, smart, sophisticated enough to kind of get things. And it's really tremendous. Anyway, Comedy Central went to Jonah Ray, Komal Nanjiani, Emily Gordon, in order to do a television show of the Meltdown show. And yes, the show in the back of a comic book store is going to be a show on Comedy Central. And I told them this, so it's not speaking out of turn here, but I told Jonah and Komal, they really, they did their best, and they've succeeded at making what the Meltdown show is work as a TV show and not changing it, because it's a great danger. As soon as TV does something, it kind of, you know, they'll put a brick wall behind you and want all the comedians to come and kind of clear their material and have all the fun brushed out of it before it gets onto television. No, Jonah and Komal said, you can come and you can tape the show and it will be a TV show, but it will be what it is, which is kind of a freeform or improvisational show that happens live in the back of a comic book store. So I recommend you see that. I was on the first show we taped last week, and I heard about it. You know, they had asked me to do the show several weeks beforehand. Now, years ago, when I used to watch comedians on television, I liked guys like Albert Brooks, like Steve Martin, and a number of other comedians who seemed, and I think did, write a set specifically for that show. Steve Martin would write a comedy set that was just for that night on The Tonight Show, or that Letterman spot he had. Albert Brooks certainly would, and just prepare something that was for the show, I suppose hoping it was funny, or having the great confidence to just think, well, this is what I want to do on the show. So because it's The Meltdown, because they were committed to doing what they do on the show, I do that a lot on the Live Meltdown show. I write songs. I perform things that I've never performed before. It's kind of loose and I mean, it's planned certainly, but it's less, certainly less disciplined than any television comedy set I've ever done on the live show. So I decided to have some guts, you know, to get some, to get some guts and do something fun. Do something that those comedy heroes of mine would do. So I decided to just write a set that was for the TV show and to try it out nowhere. Just to write it, perform it on The Meltdown show for the first time ever. Just saying, look, this is what I've prepared to do, and that's what it is. I must admit now, at this age and with this experience, hey, it could go very badly. Honestly, you know, it wouldn't feel great, but I don't care that much because it doesn't seem like television in any way really makes or breaks anybody, which is kind of a good thing. I mean, generations ago, you'd do one, go on The Tonight Show, do one comedy set, or sing one song. The next day, everyone saw it, you're a star. And today, as we know, there are 18 trillion channels, so, you know, I mean, people will see it. But not that many, so hey, have fun. So I did. I wrote a set, I wrote an opening song, I wrote kind of a swingy opening number, like it was an old-time vaudeville show or something. I did, I guess, one joke. I did a bit with a puppet, Mr. Blue. If you follow me on YouTube, you'll know who Mr. Blue is. So Mr. Blue appeared for this set. And boy, I was just confident and feeling good and just saying, I'm going to be like Steve Martin and Albert Brooks and those guys. I'm going to just do whatever I want on a TV show. Throw caution to the wind. I felt that way up to 5 to 7 minutes before it was my time to go on. And then, really, not before that. I was really feeling okay. Like, who cares? 5 to 7 minutes before, I was hit by such a wave of fear and nausea, just that realization, like, what on earth are you doing? It's television. Television never goes away. This may very well just be terrible and live forever. So That was tough living through those 5 minutes, but I committed to it. I had my friend Jonathan May, also a guest on the podcast, brilliant composer and pianist, was helping accompany me. I didn't play the guitar. I wanted my hands free. I wanted to do, hey man, I was going to express myself and do it freeform, man. And so Jonathan had a keyboard and everything, and Jonathan goes up. It's ready to go. They're ready to introduce me. Jonathan starts. The keyboard doesn't work at all. No sound coming out of the keyboard. We had gone there early. We had sound checked everything. There's a little window that looks backstage as I'm literally 2 feet from the wings of the stage, ready to come out. And Johnny looks like through this window at me with this kind of, they're about to introduce you on TV and my keyboard doesn't work. So Comel and Jonah had to go out there and delay. And then, I mean, the gigantic beads of sweat start forming on my forehead and running down my temples. And I think I was dealing with that, the pre-5 minute fear. And now it's like the keyboard is not going to work. And so much that I've written is music. And I didn't even bring my guitar. So there was a long, long delay where everyone, the sound people on the TV production, kind of looked at each other, and their looks at each other were not promising to me. Like, they were doing that kind of like, Bob, what is going, it worked 20 minutes, it was working fine. You know, not that you would expect them to shout out some instructions. Bob, take the Johnson out of that thing. Put the B-42 into the, give me an XLR. Put it in the, you know, no. Everyone was like, it was working. And now it's, I don't hear it. Do you hear it? Anybody hear it? So it really wasn't working. It was not improving things. Jonathan May, my musical director of the past 6 days now, Johnny says, well, I mean, I've got an amp in my car. We could just plug it to the amp. Everyone just says, go get your amp. Go to your car. Can you do it? Jonathan runs to his car, gets a little amp that he uses at gigs, plugs in the keyboard, and uses his amp from his car in order to power his keyboard on the internationally famous Meltdown show on Comedy Central. I went up, I did my thing, and I was thrilled with the result. And not just that it went well, but it did. It did. A good problem to have, I think, during a set, especially on TV, is when people are laughing so much it's messing up the music because they can't hear the next joke. And that's a good problem to have. But just the feeling of people listening and hearing where you're coming from and appreciating it very much is an amazing feeling. And I think it's certainly why I got into it. And it's why teenagers, as we speak, are on stage and something's happening between them and other people on stage and the audience that happens within that a tiny little room. But they find it electrifying. As I did when I was a teenager and early in theater and comedy. But I have to admit, it's been a long time. It's been a long time since that really happened. Since the bit was completely new, completely untested, nervously approached, but performed with all I've got, and really appreciated by the audience. So about 2/3 of the way through, I really thought, oh, yeah. That's why I do this. And the fact is, not a lot of people might see it. You might not see it. I mean, Kyle Kinane's on the show and he's terrific. And Tom Lennon's on the show. He's great. And Jonah and Comel. I mean, it's a terrific show. So check out The Meltdown on Comedy Central when it comes out. And it might not even look good on the camera. I don't know. I was just going for it. It may be a television failure. But live, let me tell you, between last week's show and a couple of rock and bike rides, I had a good week. I hope you have too.
It's Big Pop Fun.
And also good news from the doctor, went down to USC. All my pins, plates, screws, my Teflon exoskeleton, my carbon fiber legs, my damaged brain. Everything's okay. So we're going to continue. We're going to continue rolling forward. Thank you. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks to Chris, Katie, everybody at Nerdist Industries. Thanks to Emily Wilson for helping me produce. Thanks to everybody at McPherson Guitars for helping me on my live show. I'm all around. Come see me. Hey, you can write to me, P.O. Box 18106, Encino, California, 91416. You can email me, info@tomwilsonusa.com. Or you can just keep listening to Big Pop Fun. Consider subscribing. Tell a friend about it. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Nerdist.com